So today I wanted to talk about a topic that a lot of us have heard, experienced, something along those lines. I think that many of us have heard, or if you haven't heard, it's a topic that gets brought up a lot, but the saying that it is through much tribulation that you will inherit the kingdom of God. Anybody heard that? Through much tribulation. Also known as life is tough. We can actually go, if you want to, I like to turn to all the scriptures that I reference so that we all get to read them and get to know them and ingrain them in our hearts and minds. Let's go to Acts chapter 14. Acts chapter 14, verse 21 is where this is actually written. And we'll start off, we'll just read that, read a little bit of the context here in Acts chapter 14, verse 21. We'll start there. So the interesting thing, backstory for what is going on here, if you ever have a tough time and tough spot in your life, and you're like, man, this is tough, I don't know how I can go on, go ahead and read this. And so the backstory is that, well, we'll read it. Verse 19, the Jews from Antioch and Iconium came there, and having persuaded the multitudes, so Paul was preaching, going from city to city, and he's preaching to people. Well, the Jews come over from Antioch and Iconium, and they come over to Derbe, and they come over, not to Derbe, but they come over to Lystra, and they convince the people there to stone Paul. So they stone Paul, they throw him out of the city, and they leave him there for dead. On the heels of that, verse 21, when they had preached the gospel to that city in Lystra and Derbe, and they made many disciples, they returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch, strengthening the souls of the disciples, exhorting them to continue in the faith, and saying, we must, through many tribulations, enter the kingdom of God. So they're encouraging people. They're saying, life is tough. Paul could have said, I just got stoned and left for dead, thrown out of the city. Gird up your loins. It's going to be a long haul. Whatever other colloquial phrase that you want to throw out there. But I don't know if any of you have an easy life. You don't run into any difficulties. You don't have any health trials. You don't have any difficulties within family. It's so easy to follow God, right? I think all of us kind of like chuckle at that because it's not. It's exactly what we read here. Life is tough. And so sometimes, especially, I was talking with Jordan a little bit before services about coming back from ABC. I remember when I came back from ABC, it's kind of like I hit a brick wall because all of a sudden I didn't have my massive support group of all the people that were there. It was like, how am I going to keep doing this? This is tough. Well, we all came back from the feast a couple weeks ago, and you get into the grind, and now you're used to when your alarm comes on already now because you got to get back, you got to go to work, you have to take kids, you have to go to school, you have to do your homework, you have to go to bed at a certain time now because you have to get up to go to class. Whatever it is, we're kind of like back into our routines. And we kind of can get slogged down. We can get wrapped up in that. And we can look at those tough spots in life and those trials in life, and sometimes we can let them overtake us. And we can just be burdened, and it can be heavy, and it can be tough. And so today, I wanted to kind of talk about that topic of trials, maybe turn it on its head. We're going to go over some definitions of trials and what it actually means to have a trial. Because if I say the word trial, if I say the word tribulation, a lot of times we're thinking, I'll throw out a few guys. We get to be interactive here. We're a small enough group. If I say trial, what do you guys think of? We can go for hands. You can shout it out. If I say trial, health issues. Anything else?
Financial.
Financial, okay.
Work stress.
Life. Thank you, Mr. Freyer. All encompassing. So, you know, good stuff. Fun things to deal with, right? We think of trials and we think of that. That's not what a trial is. We've kind of taken the trial within our church speak and we've turned it into this ominous thing. This horrendous thing. I'm going through a trial. And it's horrible. And it's not that it's fun. And I'm not trying to belittle the difficult times that we go through because they are difficult. But what we want to do today, and what hopefully we're going to take a journey here, and we're going to take that idea of a trial, and we're going to look at what the word trial means. Because I think there's a lot of power in words, and we have a whole book of words. And when we understand some of the spirit behind and the definitions behind what these words mean, hopefully it changes how we look at the book. It can provide encouragement. It can provide clarity. It can provide a lot of things. So we're going to look at trials, and we're going to hopefully today redefine them. Because I have found in my life a lot of times, I can be, let's turn over to Numbers chapter 12. Numbers 12. We all look at trials differently, and we all will come at them from a different perspective. We will, we'll just address them differently. Here's one way that some folks look at things. You know, when we're in a tough spot in life, sometimes we start asking, sometimes we start demanding, sometimes we start questioning a lot of things, and we say, why am I here? Why am I going through this stuff? And so we have here in Numbers chapter 12, we're going to start in verse 1. So Miriam and Aaron, they're speaking against Moses because of the woman that he married, the Ethiopian woman whom he married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. So they're speaking against Moses. They're saying, hey, how come my life is like this? How come we are in this position and Moses is in that position? Why is my life not different? Why is it not what I wanted it to be? Why do I have to go through this as things are right now? And you go through here and you look and you see, verse 9, so the anger of the Lord was aroused against them. And he departed, and when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leprous as white as snow. And so God addresses their attitude and their behavior about how they're looking at their life. And we can look at our life, and we can look at our environment, we can look at our job, we can look at our family, we can look at whatever it is, wherever we find ourselves in life, and we can start questioning and asking. We're going to go over a couple examples of individuals and how they looked at their difficult times in life. And we're going to look at them and we're going to kind of compare, contrast, and ask what we can do and how we can look at how they addressed their difficulty and see how it can help us. So the first way we're going to do this, we're going to go over definitions of the word trial. There are three definitions we're going to go over. The first one, it's nice and short. I hope you write fast. A formal examination of evidence before a judge and typically... No, I'm just kidding. A formal examination of evidence before a judge. A formal examination of evidence before a judge. And typically before a jury in order to decide guilt in a case of criminal or civil proceedings. So basically, you're taking something before a judge, before a jury, to be able to get to the bottom of it, to decide guilt in criminal or civil proceedings. This is not, oh, it's a difficult time. This is, let's get to the bottom of it and let's find out, is there guilt here? Let's look at an example of an individual who went through this. Let's turn to Job chapter 4. If you're ever going through difficulties in life and you haven't read Job yet, we'll go over a bit of Job today. You guys can continue it. But this is a wonderful example of taking a difficult time, taking a trial, seeking to have a formal examination of the evidence before a judge and typically before a jury in order to decide guilt. So Job chapter 4, verse 1. If you're not super familiar with the story of Job, Job had a lot of wealth, a lot of physical belongings. He had many sons and daughters. And Satan basically said to God, that's the only reason he's being obedient to you. And God said, okay, you can go after Job, everything but his life. And Satan did. Took his kids, took all of his oxen, all of his wealth, everything. And so Job now has some friends that come over and spend some time with him, shall we say. Before we actually get into it, I think it's interesting. A lot of times, Eliphaz and Zophar, or Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar get a semi-bad rap. If you've ever been through a struggle, if you've ever been through a tough time, you ever have friends come to stay with you to help you through it, through the entirety of that trial? So don't write off, these weren't just flippant guys that were coming out to just tear Job down. Yes, their words were a little bit cutting, but they were also close enough friends with Job that they dropped what they were doing to come and see Job, to talk with him, to try to find out why he was going through this difficult spot in his life. And he was willing to take it from them, to take that conversation, to have the back and forth discussion with them. It's a pretty amazing blessing to have a friend, to have a brother in Christ or whatever that is going to come in your time of need and talk things through and be that emotional support through the entirety of the trial, through the difficulty. So we'll say that and kind of have that lens on as we're listening to what they say, as we're reading over what they say in their discussion with Job. So they aren't just flippantly coming at him and attacking him. So Eliphaz, chapter 4, verse 1 of Job, the Temanite answered and said, "If one attempts a word with you, will you become weary? But who can withhold himself from speaking? Surely you have instructed many, you have strengthened the weak hands. Your words have upheld him who was stumbling, and you have strengthened the feeble. But now it comes upon you, and you are weary. It touches you, and you are troubled. Is not your reverence your confidence, and the integrity of your ways your hope?" It is very easy for us, it's very easy for me, when life is going well to say, "Oh, I will pray for you. Oh, I will send a card to you. Oh, is there a way that I can help out?" It becomes a little bit more difficult for us to remain positive and for us to remain on point when we're the one that are going through the trial. And that's kind of what Eliphaz is saying to Job. He's like, you are Johnny on the spot when someone else is going through a trial. But now you have a trial. You have a difficult time in life. And what do? All of a sudden you're saying, "Oh, I can't bear it. Oh, this is too great." So he's reminding him and saying, "Hey," kind of like the shoe fits, the shoe fits doesn't work because you don't put a left foot on a right foot, but you know what I mean. Going on, he says, "Remember now, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the upright ever cut off? Even as I have seen those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his anger they are consumed. The roaring of the lion, the voice of the fierce lion, and the teeth of the young lions are broken. The old lions perish for lack of prey, and the cubs of lioness are scattered." So he's saying, you reap what you sow. So if you're going through this difficult time in life, there's probably something that instigated it. There's probably something that you did that instigated it. And Job's response to this, actually we'll continue a little bit more here with what Eliphaz says. So Eliphaz continues on chapter 5, verse 17. So you're going through this difficult time. You're dealing with things that are uncomfortable for you. All of a sudden, the shoe is on the other foot. There you go. That's what I was thinking. All of a sudden, the shoe's on the other foot, and you are the one that is going through this difficult time. Now you're not in a position to help somebody else. You don't have what you had before. So this is what you're going through. And he says, verse 17 of chapter 5, "Behold, happy is the man whom God corrects. Therefore, do not despise the chastening of the Almighty. For he bruises, but he binds up. He wounds, but he makes whole. He shall deliver you in 6 troubles. Yes, in 7, no evil shall touch you." So he goes on to say, you know, God is going to take care of you through this difficult time. And Job responds. Job responds to this, chapter 6, very end of the chapter there, verse 29 and 30. He says, "Yield now. Let there be no injustice. Yes, concede my righteousness still stands." He says, "I haven't done anything. I don't deserve this. Is there injustice in my tongue? Cannot my taste discern the unsavory?" I don't know how you guys deal with difficult times in life. There have been a lot of times that I see myself in many of these responses that Job comes back for the arguments. What did I do to deserve this? How come I'm going through this? And we can start to question and ask, why am I dealing with this? You have a friend that says, "Well, have you thought about that?" Like, that's not even part of, how could that even be related to what I'm going through here? Or these different things that we encounter in life. And Job is saying, you know, why is this happening to me? He continues on in Verse 20 and 21 of chapter 7. He says, "Have I sinned? What have I done to you, O watcher of men?" Speaking here, kind of like challenging God. He says, "Why have you set me as your target so that I am a burden to myself? Why then do you not pardon my transgression and take away my iniquity? For now I will lie down in the dust and you will seek me diligently, but I will no longer be." There are times in life where what we're going through, we feel that we couldn't possibly get through, and we would rather not be alive. We would rather die. We're saying, this is greater than I can bear. And there are scriptures you can read, and it says God is not going to test you beyond your capabilities. He's not going to push us. He wants us to be able to succeed. But we look at this, and we're like, yeah, I felt like that before. Life is rough. It's difficult when you're trying to find the rationale for why we're dealing with whatever it is that we're dealing with. And there are very serious things that we go through in life with family, with health. I don't know a single individual that probably hasn't been touched by the disease of cancer. There are so many people that go through things. There are so many people that are dealing with loss. There are so many people that have difficult times finding jobs or keeping jobs when we're striving to live this way of life. Whatever it is, there's a lot of stuff that's very serious out there that we can go through, and we can start questioning, and we can start asking, saying, God, why me? Why do I have to deal with this? And we kind of run along the progression of thought. Let's move forward a chapter to where Bildad starts talking to Job. So Bildad starts talking, beginning of verse chapter 8. He says, "How long will you speak these things, and the words of your mouth be like a strong wind? Does God subvert judgment?" You know, we're talking about this idea of that formal examination of evidence before a judge. He's like, you know, is God subverting judgment? Is he not judging? Is there something wrong with what God's doing? Or does the Almighty pervert justice? If your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. They probably did something. And that's why God dealt with them the way that he did. If you would earnestly seek God and make your supplication to the Almighty, if you were pure and upright, surely now he would awake for you and prosper your rightful dwelling place. Though your beginning was small, yet your latter end would be great. And his friends keep taking him through this progression of, consider where you are. What is it that brought you to this situation? What is it that brought you into this specific set of circumstances, Job? Let's go ahead and let's address that. And Job responds in chapter 9, we'll read verses 32 to 35. And he basically says here, well not basically, we'll read what he says here. He says, "For he," speaking of God, "is not a man as I am, that I may answer him, and that we should go to court together. Nor is there any mediator between us who may lay his hand on us both. Let him take away his rod from me, and do not let dread of him terrify me. Then I would speak and not fear him, but it is not so with me." Basically what Job is saying here is that if God were a man, if he were a human being, I would take him to court and I would win. That's a pretty strong statement, but that's what Job is saying here. He's saying, I wouldn't be scared if he were a human being, if he were a man, and I could show him, I don't deserve this. This is not what my lot in life is supposed to be. I'm not supposed to be experiencing this. This is too difficult. This is too great. You know? And a big key here, Job says there's no mediator between us. As we're looking at how Job is addressing his difficult spot in life, as he's addressing the trial that he is going through, what he's doing is he's saying, God, I want to go and I want to have my day in court with you. I want to have a trial and I want to bring all this evidence out. And you're going to see, God, that I'm not guilty and I shouldn't be here and I shouldn't be having this punishment. I shouldn't have the judgment that seems to have been handed down to me handed down. This is wrong. This is an injustice. He says, I don't have a mediator. That's a big difference for us. When we think about our relationship with God, sometimes we can get pretty argumentative about our spot. And we can say, God, I shouldn't be here. Why am I going through this? But the really cool thing is that we actually do have a mediator. We have somebody that we can talk to that is there between us and God. that says, hey, I've been there. Life is tough. There are trials and there are difficulties and there are temptations. And it's difficult. And you lose a friend and you want him back. And so Jesus Christ raised Lazarus. There are difficult times. There are a lot of times that he just did things because of the compassion and the mercy in his heart, because of the relationships that he had with people. If you think he didn't deal with loss, you go through the Gospels and you read the relationships that he had, and he was able to glorify God through those miracles and the things that he did. But he went through loss. He went through a lot of the same difficulties that we read that he was tempted in all points as we are. He goes through those difficulties. He went through them. And so we have that mediator, unlike Job in this situation. We have a mediator that understands and knows. Job is saying, if you were a human being, because I don't have a mediator who can kind of bridge the divide between the divine and the physical, I don't have that mediator. So if you were a man, then I'd take him to court. And then we'd move from there. Chapter 11, we see the third individual. These are kind of like each of the friends of Job kind of function as a judge and jury of themselves, because they're listening to the points that the other individual brings up, and they're kind of casting judgment on Job as well during this process. But it's an interesting read as we look at this from the perspective of a trial not just being a tough spot in life, but if we think of a trial as that formal examination of evidence before a judge, often a jury, to be able to figure out and weigh whether there's guilt present. Job chapter 11 started it. Zophar the Naamathite answered and said, should not the multitude of words be answered? And should a man full of talk be vindicated? Should your empty talk make men hold their peace? And when you mock, should no one rebuke you? For you have said, my doctrine is pure, and I am clean in your eyes. But oh, that God would speak and open his lips against you, that he should show you the secrets of wisdom, for they would double your prudence. Know therefore that God exacts from you less than your iniquity deserves. This is a very deep bit of verbiage there. What he covers in those five verses from 2 to 6, he says, you know, we can go and we can say, I'm pure. We can go and say, God, I haven't eaten pork in X number of years. If you're born in this faith, maybe never. Maybe you accidentally had a pepperoni. I don't know. But we can say, God, I have never had unclean meats. God, I have kept all of these commandments from my youth. Just like the rich young ruler when he went and he talked to Christ. We can have that very righteous outlook and be correct. Right? I am clean in your eyes. Why am I here? Why am I dealing with these difficulties that I'm dealing with in life? But the really telling part of this is in verse 6. It says, know, the second half of verse 6, know therefore that God exacts from you less than your iniquity deserves. If all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, our iniquity deserves one thing, and only one thing. Regardless of how righteous we are, how much we strive to follow God's way of life, how diligent we are about it, teaching children, glorifying God, and showing the example, our iniquity deserves death. And God is exacting less than our iniquity deserves. It's a very telling scripture there. And I think that as we go through things, and I like to debate. My family is a wonderful debating family. My wife says that it's arguing, but it's a healthy debate. No, so my family, I come from that. And it's like, you know what? Give me an argument. Let's go. Let's go toe to toe. Let's take this. And I will show you that you are wrong. And I will grind you into the ground and you will see that I was right and you were wrong. I win. Now, I don't know if you're like that, if you have any small inclination like that. But I'm going to blame it on human nature. I'm going to blame it on whatever. But that is That's how I go in and I say, you know what? I address the situation and I look at it and I say, no, that's not how it should be. It should be like this because I know, because I've looked at the facts, because I've looked at the evidence, because I've looked at whatever it is that my perspective allows me to see. So we look at it, and that's exactly what Job's friends are doing here. They're sitting here, they're saying, okay, I have known Job for X number of years. We have this kind of a relationship. It's close enough that I can go and I can set up camp in Job's, you know, close with Job. We can talk about this. We can have this kind of a relationship. And so I know Job right here. And I know this much about him. And so I'm looking at that and I'm taking that into account and I'm saying, Job, you're missing the boat here. Job, you realize that God doesn't do this to the unrighteous. So you've got to have something you've got to figure out. Job, you realize that what you're saying is you're saying God is being unfair. And, you know, that's not who and what God is and does. And, oh, Job, you're saying... And so they're going over, but they're addressing it with the perspective that they have. And to be fair, I think we would all agree that the perspectives that we look at issues in our lives can easily be clouded, can easily be misconstrued, can easily be only a portion of the story. There's only two beings that can know and see and understand the infinite complexities of what it is that we're going through and why it is that we're there. So Zophar presents that statement that we read, verses 2 through 6, to Job. And Job responds in chapter 13, verse 17. It says, "Listen carefully to my speech and to my declaration with your ears. See now, I have prepared my case. I know that I shall be vindicated. Who is he who will contend with me? If now I hold my tongue, I perish." I have to tell my side of the story. I have all of this evidence built up. I know because I've experienced this, because I've heard that, because I've looked into this, and I have to say something about it. I have to bring it out and post it on Facebook so that other people will recognize that I'm right. That I shouldn't be going through this difficult time. That I shouldn't have lost my job. I'm going to go talk to everybody but whatever the case is. Job is talking to his three friends. He feels that he has to say something. We can feel like we have to say something. Like it has to be said. Like if we don't do it, no one is going to. We're told in the New Testament, if we suffer for righteousness' sake, that it's counted to us as glory to be able to suffer for Christ. But oftentimes, I fall into this boat first. And I say, well, if I go talk to so-and-so, pretty sure they're going to agree with me. And then, you know, we can talk to somebody else, and then they're going to realize that, you know, I have a case here. I have a case as to why I shouldn't be going through this. Pray that I get over this health issue. Pray that I'm healed. Pray that, you know, whatever the case is. Or, you know, maybe you can put a good word in for me so that this isn't happening and this difficulty that I have isn't there. Everything that we talked about when we kind of like threw out and defined a trial, it has a pain point. And basically, we want that pain to stop. As human beings, we're very good at wanting to stop pain. So we would do a lot of things to stop pain. And so we ask to have that pain stop. But as I said earlier, we do things and we function within the parameters and within the guidelines of the perspective and the understanding that we have, which is quite limited. Let's go to the end of the book of Job. Let's go to Job chapter 42. Job 42. Start in verse 5. So God has spoken to Job. And this is Job's response. "I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, But now my eye sees you. Therefore, I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes." God took Job on a journey that made Job realize that his perspective on life was not the whole picture. "Job, you weren't there when I created the earth, set in motion the galaxies and the stars. You really have a very small, tiny window of an inkling of an idea about why it is that I'm doing what I'm doing, about how things function. There are so many times that I have found myself in a position where I'm trying to rationalize, I'm trying to argue my way out of why it is that I'm dealing with what I'm dealing with." And that's what Job was doing. And God took him on that journey and he says, "Job, I want you to recognize that there's a reason for why you're going through, you went through what you went through. I'm in control and in charge of all of this stuff. And there are countless scriptures that we can turn to where God wants the best for us, where God doesn't want that any would perish, where God, once he begins a work in you, is going to finish a work in you. There are scads of scriptures that talk about that. And if we believe that, then like Job, we have to come to the realization where our perspective changes. Where all of a sudden, we're not just saying, yeah, here, and I read this stuff. You know, I've heard it by the hearing of the ear, but now I get it. I get that this difficult time that I was going through, this trial, was really for a different reason, for me to learn something, to become something for God that He needs us to become. To develop into something different than we were prior to the trial. Because the interesting thing through this entire book of Job is that while he wanted to put God on trial for what he felt was an injustice of how he was being treated and what he was going through in life, really, when you look at it, he was the one that was being put on trial by God to see, are you going to develop the character? Are you going to realign your perspective so that you understand and realize who I am and why I'm doing these things? God gives us the opportunity to develop into something different. He gives us the opportunity to develop a bit more of his character and to, like Job did here at the end, see him and realize that where we're coming from is often, should be, an abhorrence to us. It should be something where we're really, wow, I thought like that? That was just a totally wrong thought. As was said in the opening prayer, to take that heart of stone and convert it to the heart of flesh. Instead of being hardened, instead of believing that we know what's there, be willing to be converted and have our mindset and our thought and our perspective changed to align with what God is striving to do in us and with us. Let's turn over to Revelation chapter 12. We'll start in verse 10. It says, "Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ has come. For the accuser of our brethren who accused them before our God day and night has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony they did not love their lives to the death." Verse 12, "Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath because he knows that he has a short time." This description of Satan, he's like the cross-examiner kind of guy who just comes in and tries to like just feed dissension and to accuse. He's saying, you did this, you're thinking like this, and he injects that thought process into us. And we latch onto it because it appeals to our human nature because we feel that it's a good argument. But we have, as Job didn't, we referenced earlier, we have the mediator. We have the author and the finisher of our faith. who, in verse 11, overcame Satan by the blood, by his blood. You know, we have the opportunity to do that as well, to overcome him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of our testimony. We need to look at the difficulties that we face, that God allows us to encounter, as an opportunity to show him in the court of our life, to show him that we aren't worthy of that penalty that has already been handed out, that we should be worthy of. You know, it's like God is exacting less than we deserve for our iniquity. We have that opportunity to show him and to build up the case and say, you know, God, it's not who I am. I'm striving to change. And so we have the accuser over here, and we have the mediator over here. And we're kind of stuck in the middle. And we say, no, I'm not part of that mindset. That's not what's going on in me, and that's not who I am anymore. Please let him know. Jesus, please let him know that I'm striving to change. I'm striving to be different. So instead of looking at a trial or looking at a difficulty in our life as something horrible, something painful, we can look at those trials and those difficulties as something where we get the opportunity to show to God in the court of our life that we are striving to be like him, that we're striving to overcome, and that we're striving to put on his righteousness and put on his type of character.